You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts, tracking down the threats and vulnerabilities, solving some of the hard problems of protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us.
What the team noticed as part of the hacking activity was a new .NET-based malware and the DNS backdoor component that we'll shortly talk about being used for espionage.
That's Deepan Desai. He's Chief Information Security Officer and VP of Security Research and Operations at Zscaler. The research we're discussing today is titled Lyceum .NET DNS Backdoor. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. Well, let's walk through it together, and let's start at the beginning here. I mean, how does someone find themselves victim of this? How do they find their way in?
Right. So in this case, I mean, the group, the campaign that the team discovered was where the Lyceum threat actor was leveraging the military affairs as a theme. Specifically, they were talking about Iran deploys drones to target internal threats and protect external interests. And that was the theme of the lore that was being used to get the victim to click on a link and get the infection chain started. There was a newly registered domain that they were leveraging. As soon as the user clicks on that, provided that they fall for the theme, a dropper disguised as a PDF gets downloaded, which further downloads the backdoor, which is the .NET DNS backdoor.
So just to be clear here, I mean, it starts off with a phishing email with a, you say, sort of a subject-based lure, and then we try to get them to click through and then ultimately deploying that dropper.
Exactly. And we also saw another variant of the chain where instead of PDF, there was an actual macro document. But again, it starts with a phishing email containing a link, talking about Iran drones, right? So it could be that. We also noticed another vendor talk about Russia-Ukraine theme being leveraged early this year by the Lyceum group as well. So it starts with that. The link leads to the dropper payload, which could be a PDF or a macro document. And that's what leads to the final backdoor payload, which is responsible for the espionage activity.
So let's talk about that backdoor payload. What exactly goes into that? What is it capable of?
Right. So what was interesting about this one was when we looked at the payload, so it hit our cloud sandbox. It was detonated. We convicted it as malicious. But when the team started analyzing it, we noticed that majority of the code was picked up from the open source tool dig.net. Dig.net is a open source tool, which is a partial implementation of the Linux dig command. It's not complete implementation. It's a partial implementation, but it does DNS resolving functions. Dig is the domain information gropper tool that's part of the Binds software suite. But coming back to the point, majority of the code base was this open source tool, and they customized it as part of this backdoor to then leverage it to perform DNS hijacking as well as DNS-based CNC activity.
So I suppose, I don't know, if you were being generous, we could say they're working smarter, not harder. If we were not being generous, maybe a little laziness on their part?
Yeah, this is definitely smarter, right? Because it's a open source tool. Code bases, majority of it is similar to what the open source tool out there is doing. The other smarter part over here is leveraging DNS as a channel. So for those of you that don't know, DNS hijacking is where they're able to manipulate the DNS response queries using an attacker-controlled DNS server, right? Mm-hmm. So a simple example from a machine where this backdoor is already running, if a user or when the malware seems to be going to apple.com, it's actually not going to apple.com, but to an attacker-controlled infrastructure. So in the logs, it may appear that the request is going to apple.com or the query is for apple.com, but it's being manipulated using the attacker-controlled DNS server. And the second aspect, Dave, if I may add, is where using that same channel, now they're using the DNS text records for command and control activity as well. So what that means is the threat actor, in this case, the Lyceum Group guys, are able to send commands to the infected machine to perform things such as upload files, download files, or any other commands. And the command goes through the DNS channel as well, so using the text records. And then the A records are used for exfiltration, which is the response to those commands. So the attacker may execute a command like, show me all the files that exist in certain directory. The output of that will again go through the DNS channel A records, where it's all encoded and then sent through the DNS channel.
So that helps hide what they're up to here, I suppose. Is that an efficient way to do things, or is the stealthiness more important than the efficiency here?
It is more towards a stealth part, like they're trying to evade detection, right, using this channel. So it's more towards that than efficiency.
So what does it appear that they're after here?
So this group is known to, you know, maintain persistence in the victim environment, and the goal is cyber espionage. Right? They're looking for very specific information, and that specific information then gets relayed to the attacker. In this case, they were using military affairs team, so it's reasonable to assume that some of the government sector organizations were being targeted. So in one of the cases, it was the Iranian drone team. In the other case, as I mentioned, it was Russia-Ukraine team where some of the other regions' government sector was being targeted.
And how are they maintaining persistence on the machines that they're able to infect here?
Yeah, so they will, once the user falls for the phishing email, right, and the link gets downloaded, in case of PDF or the macro document, the malicious backdoor will get downloaded, and it will use the startup option to basically make sure every time the system reboots, the backdoor executes as part of it. So they're able to maintain persistence and stay under the radar, because the only communication that's going out as a result of this backdoor, as I mentioned, is DNS protocols. So on the network layer itself, you're not seeing some suspicious activity. It's all DNS queries.
So does that mean that they're successful in, you know, evading typical endpoint protection?
In many of the cases, yes, they are able to do that. It's not difficult to catch this, but it's how, you know, they keep evolving. Like in this case, you saw them using an open source tool and customizing it enough to carry out their operation. But that's the cat and mouse game, right? That security industry on the endpoint side is have to play when they evolve certain things. Endpoints at times fail. Many of the cases, endpoints do end up detecting it, you know, hours or day after.
So what are your recommendations here? I mean, for in terms of folks best protecting themselves?
Yeah, in this case, I mean, the organization, it's critical that you are inspecting. So there are two things. One is, you know, the phishing part where user education is important. Number two part is where when the user ends up clicking on any of these links, right, you need to have that consistent inspection happening, right? Whether the threat actor is using a TLS channel to download that initial dropper and the backdoor or something else. The goal is to inspect and prevent that initial payload from entering your endpoints or your environment. The second important piece over here is assume that your controls fail at that first stage. You need to have, again, inspection for all ports and protocol in order to flag some of the you know, CNC activity that we talked about as well. In this case, it's using DNS as a channel for both command and control activity as well as data exfiltration. So the point is have that post-infection activity getting detected and blocked, have the data exfiltration channel getting detected and blocked as well.
How do you rank this threat group in terms of their sophistication?
So if you look at the payload, it was pretty basic. I mean, I wouldn't, and honestly, that has been the case with many other groups, but that's a tricky question, Dave. Relative rank the group compared to the others.
Right, right. Because it's not necessary. I mean, sometimes simpler can be effective, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was simple, but it was effective.
Our thanks to Deepin Desai from Zscaler for joining us. The research is titled Lyceum.net DNS Backdoor. We'll have a link in the show notes. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Rachel Gelfin, Liz Irvin, Elliot Peltzman, Trey Hester, Brandon Karpf, Eliana White, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabi, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week.